Appaloosa Radio offers dry, wheat, stubble and original audio story. Chapter 4. Jeff Blake reached for her hand and gently brought it to his lips and kissed it. "Miss Lisa Murray, will you marry me?"
"Mr. Jeffrey Robert Blake, I most certainly will."
What Lisa had not yet told Jeff was that while she was in the substance abuse program, two remarkable things had happened in her life. During her third week in the compound, the Denver police had come to interview her. She did not know that George Paternino's legal appeals had been granted and he had been freed from prison. The district attorney had tried to build a new case against him, but without the evidence gathered during the undercover operations, they had almost nothing that could be used in court. Former acquaintances, associates, underlings, and enemies had no desire to cooperate with the authorities. There was no way to make a case. This meant that George Paternino was free to do whatever he wanted. What he wanted was to be the Colorado drug king again. However, there were others who did not want to give up what they had acquired. 8 days after his release from prison, George Paternino was murdered. 19 bullets in his chest and one, large caliber, bullet in each hand. The Denver police came to Aspen to interview Lisa to see if she knew anything they did not. She didn't. After Jeff Blake had sent her his check, she terminated all contact with George. The second remarkable thing happened near the end of her time in the compound. A well-respected lawyer met with her to share the details of George Paternino's estate. Remember that Lisa had devoted considerable energy to discovering where George had hidden his wealth, and she had discovered nothing. The lawyer said that George had never handled any of his own money. He had a secret money manager do it for him. The estate was substantial, but not as large as Lisa, and the police, had believed. The lawyer told Lisa that George had left everything to a foundation that studied extraterrestrial life. George believed that the visitors would one day come for him. So, none of George's money would come to Lisa. However, the lawyer said that the money manager had suggested buying a life insurance policy and making Lisa the sole beneficiary. Something must have gone wrong in George's brain. Instead of buying just the one policy that the money manager recommended, George bought a new policy every month for the 6 months before his arrest. The same policy. Exactly the same in every detail. Lisa was now the beneficiary for 6 separate policies, each worth $250,000. All totaled, Lisa was to get $1.5 million. Of course, she'd owe taxes, but it was still enough for her to become a moderately wealthy woman. Now that she could afford it, she asked the estate lawyer to recommend the best divorce lawyer in Denver. She would use some of her money to get Jeff Blake the best possible deal in his divorce. Which brings the story to July 1973 when Becky Blake received a phone call that changed her life. "Mrs. Becky Blake," the caller began. "I am Lisa Paternino and I am in love with your stud husband. He loves me too. So, we're going to get married. He is going to divorce you, so he can be all mine. He has such a great body. So warm. So sexy. I just love it when he touches me." What is ironic is that Lisa and Jeff had never had sex.
They had never been alone. They had only kissed once. Still, Lisa's phone call had its desired impact. Becky roared home to confront Jeff, but he was not there. He had left minutes after Becky drove off for work. He had also already quit his position at the prison. Through connections, men who knew men who knew men, some Masonic lodge magic, and a bit of luck, Sergeant Jeff Blake was hired by the then-expanding Arvada Police Department. As soon as his probation was complete, he was promised a promotion to sergeant. Altogether, the job change netted a 15% salary increase. Lisa knew that Jeff could never say goodbye to Becky. He just did not have the personality to do it. He could handle violence, but not personal, psychological conflict. So, Lisa told him that she would handle it, as she would everything else related to the divorce. On the very day that she called Becky, Lisa told the divorce lawyer to begin proceedings. And she specifically told him to go for the jugular. She wanted no nasty and unresolved conflicts. Clean and complete. It turned out that going for the jugular was far easier than anyone thought. Becky had no experience with lawyers and made the mistake of hiring Bozo the Clown as her attorney. The lawyer representing Jeff Blake smiled when he learned who would be opposing him. Becky's lawyer met with her for a couple of hours but did nothing more to prepare for the case. In his notes, he called Becky Blake a frumpy housewife from farm country. His notes also said that Lisa was an exotic dancer who worked at a strip club. Completely untrue. Jeff's lawyer said that Bozo was probably confusing his cases. However, the very worst thing that Becky's lawyer did to damage her case was to give her the wrong address for the divorce hearing. He sent her to a courthouse two counties over from where it was actually held. She sat for hours outside a courtroom waiting for the case to be called. In her own hearing, the presiding judge was very irritated that she was not there. He demanded that her attorney explain her absence. He couldn't. So, he made excuses that all turned out to be untrue. The judge went from just irritated to downright angry. Jeff and Lisa's attorney sought to establish three key allegations. First, they argued, Mrs. Becky Blake was a religious fanatic whose extreme religious beliefs had interfered with the couple's married life, precluding sexual relations and hindering interactions with friends and relatives. She required the family to recite prayers for hours and hours and frequently forced fasting onto them. She forbade all reading material except the Bible. She screamed in fear at objects and people she said were demonic. She was rigid, unchanging, fixed in her beliefs. This should have been easy to disprove, but Bozo had not done his preparations. Instead, his strategy had been to rely on Becky to tell her own story in person. She did not seem extreme when he had interviewed her in his office. Of course, she was not in the courtroom and, thus, could not counter the claims that were being made. Bozo also had many of the facts wrong. He said she was a Mormon, when in fact, she was a Baptist. The missionary trip to Mexico had been for a week, not months. She sang in the choir, but so did Jeff. The family did contribute regularly to the church, but it was a moderate level, less than 10% of their income. Becky Blake was known more for her baking than her religiosity. Second, Lisa and Jeff's attorney argued that the difficult financial situation that the Blakes were in was a result of Becky's reckless spending. Again, this should have been easy to disprove since it was Jeff's failed investments that had driven the family to fiscal ruin. However, Bozo had not even asked Becky the obvious question, who handles the finances? He was unprepared to answer any question in detail. Third, because of Becky's extreme religious views, the lawyer's brief argued, she was a parent who abused and mistreated her sons. The lawyer introduced depositions from the three Blake boys attesting to being whipped with a belt. The depositions, however, did not say that it was Jeff, not Becky, who had used the belt, and the whippings had happened only once. Thereafter, Becky banned using a belt to punish the boys. Again, without Becky to provide in-person testimony and with an incompetent lawyer, another false allegation was not effectively contested. Lisa's lawyer was good at what he did. The judge ruled against Becky on all three allegations. With the allegations established, he continued with rulings that were very detrimental to Becky. First, he ruled that the house and land be sold, and all the outstanding debts be paid. Then, he ruled that any residual funds should be placed in a trust fund for the three Blake sons. No money would go to either Becky or to Jeff. Finally, he ruled that Jeff should be awarded full and permanent custody of his three sons. He ruled that Becky could have visitation rights every other week, but to do so, she must reside within 20 minutes of their schools. If Becky wanted to see her sons, she must move to where they now lived. Lisa Murray, soon to be Mrs. Lisa Blake, had won a complete and decisive victory. Neither George Paternino, conjugal visitations, drug deals, nor prison guards were ever mentioned during the divorce hearing. There was no discussion of how Sergeant Jeff Blake and Lisa Paternino came to know each other. There was no discussion of the unexpected phone call that Becky received. It was a clean victory with no entanglements. The lawyer had ripped open a jugular, without damaging either Jeff or Lisa. Poor Becky. Not only did she suffer because of the ineptitude of her attorney, she was forced to pay him a premium rate for his time in court.